ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ॐ सहना भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः। I have a feeling that most of us practice meditation because there is no doubt that meditation is the very heart of yoga. Meditation is also the very heart of life itself. It is not apart from life. I wish to make this statement right in the beginning so that I don't forget it. It is not a thing apart from life. It is not a part of life. If one may use another sort of overstatement, life may be part of meditation. It is a continuous process. One doesn't have to close one's eyes or open one's eyes. There is no need to keep the eyes open, and there is no need to keep the eyes closed either. You have to do something, well, do either of these. But what is meditation? What are we talking about? The meditation that we talk about begins with talk and ends with talk. The meditation that we talk about is not understood by the speaker, nor is it clear to anybody that listens to it. Because meditation can neither be taught nor be learned, neither be described nor be grasped. So what shall we do? Meditation is central to yoga. Because the very word yoga means union. Union is not possible, not even conceivable, of two totally independent entities. Totally independent in the sense of totally dissimilar entities. To give you a rough and ready example, here is some water. You can get another glass of water. This is a glass of water, and that's a glass of water. Pour both these into a bowl, and they have become united. They have become one. Are you sure they were two before? Indeed, this was in this glass and the other thing was in that glass. But both of them were water already. Don't you already see that what I said was totally absurd? Both of them were water. What a silly statement. Where is both if you are referring to one? You are talking about water and where is both water? This water and that water? Only water can become one with water. Huh. Nothing else in the world can become one with water. Is that right? Of course, you can add some salt to it. And the salt pretends to become one with water, just as we all pretend to have a super consciousness, transcendental. Huh? You all pretend to. Seventh state. Have you heard? 19th, 18th. They have invented a few more now. A few years ago, when I was in the Himalayas, I only heard of seven states of consciousness. Even that was a bit of an unnecessary stretching for me. But now I am hearing more and more and more. They are adding a few more. Like, I think they are learning from these American skyscrapers. If they can go on adding stories, why shouldn't we keep on adding stories to this 18 states of consciousness? We may look at our nose and very steadily pretend to have attained union with the Absolute. We may take some acid and pretend that the whole world is lucid. These things take you nowhere. These are all pretensions. Just like salt pretending that it has become one with water. You know what to do, don't you? When that salt says, hey, I become one with water. You know what to do with it, don't you? Set fire to it underneath. Heat it up. Huh? And you put a little bit of fire underneath. Then the salt is left behind, the truth has left it. The salt is left behind and the truth has evaporated. That's precisely what happens to our pretensions. Huh? You sit here. It's good for the eyes. With your eyes screwed up, looking, you know what I'm doing? Looking at the third eye. With the third eye, I am supposed to be seeing the whole universe, and I have to look at the third eye with these two eyes. What a terrible travesty. And pretend I have become one with the Absolute. What must you do when I pretend like this? Set fire underneath. Heat me up. Warm me up. Call my bluff. Call my bluff. And strangely enough, the truth evaporates, only the bluff remains. And the truth is gone. I shan't pretend anymore. I am pure salt. Can I become one like that? There is a wonderful aphorism in Sanskrit, Devo Bhutva Devam Aradhayet. In order to worship God, in order to love God, in order to meditate, well, forgive the preposition upon God, we don't sit upon God. Anyhow, in order to meditate upon God, you must be God. Or you must realize like this. You must realize that the division between I and God was imaginary, assumed. And that it has never been real. Therefore, yoga is the union of two which have always been one. Does that make any sense to you? I hope not. Yoga is the union of two which were always one. The mere discovery of this is meditation. It has to be discovered. The discovery of this is meditation. What is it that was standing between me and that God Almighty? What is it that has been, that was or is standing between me and this omnipresent Almighty God? Did you hear that word, omnipresent? What can stand between me and omnipresent God? Only the word me. If I have to become one with God, who is sitting on the roof, then at least in the space which I occupy, God does not exist. If God already exists everywhere, what am I going to do? How to get one with Him? Hey. What stands between me and God? I repeat, only the word me. Only the word exists, only the sound exists, and only the thought or the idea of a me exists. The understanding of this is meditation. The direct and clear understanding of this is meditation. You go to the beach, sit and watch. The ocean is calm. There are waves, lovely waves, beautiful waves. Some are small, some are big. What beautiful waves. I'm sure you use this expression. What beautiful waves on the ocean. Or in the ocean, I don't know what are you. Waves on the ocean? What is waves on the ocean? Is the wave not the ocean? Or did the wave drop from the skies or something like that? The wave is the ocean. It sprang from the ocean and it will dissolve into the ocean. But even while the appearance of the waveness of the wave lasts, it is still the ocean. It was, is, will be the ocean. It was, is, will be non-different from the ocean. And yet, you do see the wave, don't you? Don't you see the wave? Don't you see the waves playing upon the surface of the ocean? And what is a wave? Now you are looking within. That you are meditating now. Now you are looking within, you are meditating. What is the wave? Wave is the ocean, the same water as the rest of the ocean. And yet you cannot deny. It's stupid to deny that this is the wave and that is the ocean. The wave is a thought, an idea, a concept, a word. It is there, it is there. One would be terribly foolish to deny the existence of the wave as part of the ocean. Is it part of the ocean? Well, all words are stupid. I don't know why not use one set of words. When you see the whole thing, you are meditating. When you see the ocean, when you see the wave, when you see the wave as part of the ocean, and when you know that the whole idea is stupid because wave is not part of the ocean, it's the ocean, it's not the ocean, etc., etc. When you see the whole confusion, when you see the total confusion of what we are talking about, you are meditating. It is one, it is two, it is many, it is none. All these things put together is the truth. Possibly not. Because then you are defining the truth, that means you are hooked on to a thought, to an idea. In this internal commotion and turmoil, a great peace is born, a great understanding is born, and that understanding is meditation. To bring it down to our daily life here, All these are like those waves. In that one ocean. All born in that ocean. All existing as ripples and waves in that ocean. And they will subside into the ocean. Before they arose, only the omnipresent existed. After all these will be dissolved, the one omnipresent will exist. And even now that omnipresence alone exists. But that is not to say that all this is illusory. Well, some of these are beautiful illusories, never mind. Maybe illusory, but some of you are very beautiful. Good. No harm. There is this extraordinary paradox. Paradox means something which cannot be taught beyond teachability. That one appears to be many, and the many seem to be individually true and yet totally true. The unraveling of this mystery or the paradox is meditation. The discovery of individuality. You know, I suppose at least some of you who have been with me before, you know that I love birds, to look at them and to play with them. Even the word individuality is not one word. It's two separate words telescoped into each other. When you telescope something into, you know, something is lost. What are the two words? Indivisible is one word. Duality is another word. When this indivisible duality is telescoped one into the other, it became individuality. The sibyl was dropped, you know, telescoping. You had to sacrifice a few letters in order to telescope. So, indivisible duality became individuality. I hope there are no English professors here at the moment. I don't know English. I only learned it at school. It's an indivisible duality. It's an indivisible duality. I am in God, whoever it is that is omnipresence, God is. I am, God is. God is omnipresent, I am there also. You cannot deny me, nor can you deny the omnipresence of God. Then what is our relationship? That is individuality. Indivisible, I am part. Not part in the sense that I have cut this carpet into three quarters and one part is there, one part is here. No. The part is all the time in the whole. If the part is all the time in the whole, how can you call it a part? Well, you have to call it. Why must you call it? Otherwise, how am I going to talk to you? What am I going to talk to you about? Imagine all of us being, you know, constantly conscious of the one. It'll be a pretty dull world. So in order to talk about it, in order to describe it, we have assumed there is a part, relationship of part and part. You know, I may be joking, but I think I'm partly serious. If there is some kind of eruption there, you scratch yourself. One part of the same body scratches another part of the body, you feel delightful, don't you? That is exactly what happens. Even now, I am merely scratching your ears. One part entertaining the other part, that's all. Nothing more happens. The direct understanding of this truth is meditation. Slowly it's coming up. I don't know, some of you may be shocked. I hope you are. But I feel it is not such a terribly serious business. You have seen those serious people, long face. As they grow long, older and older, they get longer and longer and longer and longer. And when they are sitting for their meditation upon God, their face makes me feel that they are afraid of more of the devil. Because they seem to see the devil around them. If I see God around, if I see God within, God around, I must be happy, joyous, glorious. If I realize that God is omnipresent, God is, you know, just your word used to communicate. Don't worry about God. You can use any other word. It's strange, isn't it? That every unknown quantity in mathematics is referred to symbolically as ABC or XYZ. Very rarely we use WXYZ. Huh? We always use the three letters XYZ or ABC. ABC of relativity, XYZ of theology. And in the same way, we have this G-O-D. It means nothing. It means nothing or it means everything. You have to discover it for yourself. And that discovery is meditation. You know what a wonderful word this discovery is? Discovery is taking the lid off, the veil off. You have not seen God. That's why you want to discover, yes? And you want to discover God . I see somebody sitting outside on the bench. You know, like some of these Middle East people, I find that there is a veil. Maybe the legs look like maybe good looking person, man or woman, I don't know. Anyhow, I'm curious or I'm desirous. I'm desirous of unveiling this mystery. I'm desirous of discovering it. I suppose I hope I'll see a very beautiful face. But more than that hope, I don't have anything. I have no idea what kind of face or what I will see when the veil is lifted. Can you put yourself in such a situation like that? You don't know what is beyond that veil. You are eagerly lifting it, knowing that you will see something. Is it clear? Knowing you will see something, but not knowing what you will see, that is meditation. You look within or without or whatever it is. You look at the veil that you see around the world. And you are lifting that veil. As you lift the veil, you have no idea. In meditation, we have no idea at all what to look for. We are not looking for anything. You are only conscious of the veil of ignorance. You are only conscious of the fact that there is a feeling, I don't know what God looks like. And with the devotion, with the love and the eagerness and the hope and the anything you may have, I am lifting the veil. And what I see for the first time. This is meditation. This is meditation. If I sit down here to meditate with a ready-made, you know, God, that is like unveiling the face of a nagging wife. I know her so much. So much, so well. A reason why most of us cannot concentrate. Most of us cannot concentrate because it is boring. Lifting the veil off my own projection. I know what it is. I know it is false. I know it is imaginary. And I take the veil off, I see this thing. I've seen this 1,000 times. Who wants to see it again? I get bored and distracted. Therefore, in the practice of meditation, whatever be the method one uses, there should be this whole-souled devotion or eagerness. Almost insatiable curiosity. And a complete absence of preconceived notions. If these are not there, you'll get stuck. You'll get bored, not stuck, sorry. You'll get bored and therefore distracted. One may before we go into the some practical hints, one more. Aspect of the theory should also be borne in mind. The only thing that stands between God and me is me. If the me is gone, really and truly only the omnipresent will exist. That me has to go. Whatever be the yoga you are supposed to be practicing, you are a bhakti yogi, karma yogi, or hatha yogi, kundalini yogi, or raja yogi, what you call it. Yoga is the realization of the unity that is already present. Already existing unity. To which the only obstacle is me. The assumption or a supposition of the existence of the ego. That must go. This should never be forgotten. And one may adopt any method, but keep a vigilant watch on the arising of this me. The moment there is a feeling, oh, I am meditating, I am in deep meditation, you are deep, fast asleep. The I must dissolve. The shadow must vanish when this light shines. When the light of meditation or inner awareness shines, that shadow must disappear. The shadow, me is but a shadow, nothing more than a shadow. Whatever be the method you use, you will eventually, one day or the other, confront this ego, this me. That is the final obstacle. It is, you know why it is the final obstacle? Because most of what we regard as yoga practice, now listen carefully, most of what we regard as yoga practice is done by the ego. Is that clear? It is the ego that does the yoga practice. You know why? If the ego was not there, there is no need for a yoga practice. If the water that had been separated in these two glasses was in the bucket or in the bowl, they don't need to be brought together, they're one already there. It is only because there is a separation, there is a feeling of separation, there is an idea of separation, there is a notion of separation, false, however false it is only because this false notion exists that there is the need for the removal of that false notion. And who is it that is practicing all this fantastic yoga? The ego. And therefore, as the ego is getting finer and finer, purer and purer, more and more and more sensitive, it naturally reflects the ground. The omnipresent. I'm sure you have seen, if you have been swimming in the sea, occasionally you see a fairly thin wave. Anyone has seen this? A fairly thin wave, you could see through it. It's got most delightful, beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful sights in the sea. Huh? Some are thick and, you know, like us. Some of them are so fine that you can see through them. And the water there is like sapphire. You don't believe it is water. It's so beautiful. The ego, as it goes on practicing all these yoga, it becomes purer and purer, finer and finer, thinner and thinner, thinner in a figurative way. That transparent, that the light of the omnipresent is able to flow through it. Even, it is said, the great saints, the men of God realization, even they have an ego. If the ego was not there, the body wouldn't be kept in position. If the ego was not there, a hand might, throat might feel thirsty, the hand might pick up the glass and put it into that mouth. What is it that makes the hand bring it to this mouth? That's the ego, naturally. It is so fine that it is as good as non-existent. It is so fine that it is as good as non-existent. Good enough for us. All these yoga practices are indulged in by the ego. And yet, even while this goes on, it is possible for each one of us, in the light of this inner awareness, to look out for it. There, in this observation of oneself, in this inquiry into oneself, in this observation or inquiry into oneself, one is able to observe one's total inner being and become aware, become conscious of the rise and fall of thought, become conscious of the commotion caused by emotion. It's possible, it's possible. That is again one of the objects of meditation in its early stages. Are you able to observe yourself? And by looking within, can you come face to face with the arising of a thought? Can you come face to face with the arising of an emotion? While you do so, naturally, you will come face to face with the root thought. It's also a thought, the thought called I. I is the first thought. Once this first thought, I, comes into being, all the others come and build a hive. This I is like the queen bee. Once it has taken its position, then the others come in. All the drones, it also lays at the rate of 3 million eggs an hour. That's what worries us in our meditation, no? Once this I thought has awakened, it lays eggs at the rate of 3 million thoughts per minute. You must watch it when you practice meditation. You must watch it very carefully. When all these other thoughts have been disposed of, how do we do that? By resorting to any yoga method. The methods are intended like brooms to sweep out all other dirt. It is not that a broom is something which, you know, is like your brush, hairbrush. After doing this, you won't do this. The broom is as dirty as the filth it removes. So after sweeping the floor, you throw the broom out and go and wash your hands. Yeah, and yet, without the help of the broom, you could not have been able to sweep your room properly. And therefore, we invent tons of methods. Each method being adapted to one's own temperament, one's own need, one's own approach to this meditation. But all of them must have this central feature, and that is the discovery of thought, the discovery of emotion, and ultimately the discovery of the ego. The ego is a mixture of thought and emotion. The ego is a product of, is a thought. The I is a thought. And it later thinks it on it by itself and feels and so on and so forth. The reason why we are asked to meditate early in the morning, soon after waking from sleep. When you sit for your meditation soon after waking from sleep, there is an advantage. Usually you get up at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. We say, all right, we'll sit for our meditation 5:30. You kick yourself out of bed, or the alarm clock kicks you out of bed. And you sit down for a meditation, you're already feeling sleepy. or you are already, your thoughts are running here and there. Oh, I must do this, I must do that. There is good reason at that time to tell yourself, normally I used to wake up at 7. In order to meditate, I have got up at 5:30 today. What is the hurry? I am asleep now. I am asleep now. I don't have to do anything now. I am nothing but this. You have a chance to tell yourself that. And when you deal with your mind in this manner, then you can sort of quieten the mind, give it a single job. Now the time is for only meditation, nothing else. I must sleep otherwise. If I am not going to be meditating, I am going to be sleeping. I am not going to work. And therefore, this hour is for meditation. Then, one can take up a mantra. Mantra is like Om Soham. For a few minutes, I consciously and mentally repeat the mantra, linking it with the breath. Now if the mind is too turbulent, you can sort of whisper the mantra, lisp the mantra for a few minutes. And then, associating it with the breathing, I consciously and mentally repeat the mantra. And as I do so, naturally I am able to hear inwardly. As I consciously repeat the mantra, I inwardly listen to it, I am able to listen to it. This is one part. Another part is you can mentally again, inwardly visualize. Some symbol or image of God. In accordance with your religious faith or disposition. This again is done deliberately. Mentally and deliberately, you are visualizing an image of God. What kind of image or what kind of symbol is your business? Anything is good enough. If you will listen to the explanation, you will discover that anything is good. So I have these two steps. One, I mentally and consciously repeat a mantra. Two, I mentally and consciously, deliberately, create an image within myself. It may sound heretical and blasphemous, but this is what I referred to earlier as the broom. With the help of these two, a name and a form, I sweep out all the other names and forms that may arise in my mind. These were self-created. I don't think God looks, I may not, when I say I don't think, I don't assume, I have no business to assume that God looks like that. May or may not, I don't know. But this I am deliberately introducing, projecting into myself. Now, once you have sort of got established in this, try and see for how many, shall we say, minutes or seconds, anyhow, whatever you like, you can hold these two in your consciousness without your attention straying away here and there, probably 10, 20 seconds. Immediately your mind begins, your mind doesn't wander, the attention wanders. You are thinking of this, you're looking at this form of figure of God or whatever it is, you are thinking of this, you are hearing this mantra, but suddenly it's gone away there. Ah, this looks like the motor car. It's gone. And if after persistent practice you succeed in retaining this focus on the mantra and the form that you have visualized, if you succeed in it, then you will enjoy a wonderful experience. I don't know if you have ever stuck your foot in a fish pond or a river, and if you have ever been if your leg has been ever nibbled at by the fish, exactly a similar feeling you will have inside. Your attention is focused on this mantra and this form, and on all sides some other thoughts are nibbling. You see through the periphery of your vision that these are all clamoring for your attention. It goes on. That's a signal for you to be extra cautious. If you are not, like for instance, in any public park or marketplace, someone is standing there, and then there are men passing there, and women, men, girls and boys all strolling around in a school campus or in a compound. And a girl keeps sitting there and, on a bench, in a park bench, looking at all these passers-by as if unconcerned. And suddenly, one boy, Mr. X, Mr. X is there, then the girl's heart and lungs and everything, as it were, jumps into the eyes. You've seen that? Huh? And then the whole attention is gone there, nothing here, you don't exist, I don't exist, nobody exists. I saw this in Canada. We went to a ski resort, Mount Tremblant, with a couple. They had found each other just that afternoon. None of us existed. They were so completely wrapped up. And the Swami didn't exist, the ski lift didn't exist, the tea didn't exist, the cake didn't, nothing existed. I looked at them and I said, good heavens, if only I had that much of attention to God, phew. It's fantastic. I'm sure you have seen some of these, something like this, or probably experienced something like probably passed through an experience like this. But perhaps also you don't remember it. You know why? You are not aware of it yourself. As that couple obviously were not aware how thoroughly wrapped up they were in each other. That is it. As this nibbling goes on, most of these thoughts that come crowding into your field of consciousness, clamoring for your attention, most of them I call pedestrian thoughts. That is, you are essentially not interested in them. They're not so attractive. But then, camouflaged, one of those thoughts will come, which will whisk you away and gone. You're gone. And probably you'll wake up 2 hours later and suddenly you find yourself, what have you been doing so far? one has to be extremely vigilant. And when you have acquired sufficient strength to stand on this, then, as some yoga teachers teach you, you can even get hold of one of those thoughts and find the source. But to try that in the beginning is to court disaster. You can do that, of course. You can take a glass of champagne and sip it, and following the course of that sensation, you can find the soul and God, everything, naturally. But if you do it in the beginning, you'll get drunk. And even if you don't do that, even if you are quite content with your mantra and your the meditation on this image, one day or the other, when the mind is really steady, it is good to inquire. And what is the inquiry? The inquiry is this. Supposing this is the figure of God I am meditating upon, Vishnu or what, it's also like this. Or Swami Shivananda, for instance, also like this. And I know what this is made of. And with closed eyes or open eyes, I can see this in me, in my body, whatever it is. Are you following this? You know what this is made of. You are meditating, let's say, on the form of Shivananda, on the form of Krishna, on the form of Jesus, on the form of Swamiji. When you say Krishna, when you say a personality, you know what this personality is made of. Flesh, bone, skin, stuff and nonsense. Now, with open eyes or closed eyes, I am visualizing that image inside. And I am able clearly to see the image. Buddha. Is that clear? You are able to see the image of Buddha clearly within you. I know what Buddha also must have been like this. Same. Flesh, bones, hair, skin. I see the Buddha here. What is this made of? What is this Buddha that I am seeing within? What is this made of? No, please don't answer. Is the question clear? Oh, the question is important. I know what the Buddha should have been made of, or like a human being. Since I know what a human being is made of, I know what Buddha was made of or Jesus was made of. I can see it here. What is this made of? One question. Question number two. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. That's right. That is, my vocal cords vibrated as the air escaped from my lungs, and that came out as sound. The sound was heard, and I heard the sound. Is that clear? Right? Whether you are singing and I am hearing, or I am singing and I am hearing, that is how I hear. When two things strike each other, as the wind striking the vocal cords, sound is produced, and that sound is heard. I am not moving my lips, I am not moving my vocal cords. And yet I can hear the mantra. Yeah? When you mentally repeat the mantra, you can hear the mantra from within you. How is that sound produced? Another question. It's only a question that is important. How is that sound produced? Yeah, it's an extremely simple question we have never asked ourselves. Because we are hooked on to these words, mental repetition. Why not empty glass? Mental repetition, there are two words. Empty glass, also two words. We have got those words and we have got an illusion that we understand what it means. We don't. So if you, while doing this, ask yourself the question, how can I hear this? How can I hear a sound which is not produced? Terrible. And then the whole adventure starts. Inner adventure starts. So though I am using a mantra and a form and so on, I am using them with the sole purpose of getting into the mind, getting through the mind, right down to the veil. I am only asking the question. Of course I am expecting an answer. The question is like lifting the veil. While I do so, I don't anticipate. I anticipate to see, discover something, but I am not. I don't know what I am going to discover. That extraordinary energy produced by this tremendous eagerness and devotion is there. The tremendous eagerness of a boy lifting the veil of a girl whom he has never seen. That eagerness, that love, that excitement is there. Excitement in a different sense. But I don't know, I don't assume what the face will look like. I don't know. If these things are combined, whatever method you adopt for your meditation will prove most fruitful. And sooner or later, you will come face to face with the mind stuff. And as you purify this mind, by meditation, by continued meditation, then it becomes so transparent that it is revealed to you that even the ego is a thought. The I is a thought. At that stage, God is realized. Not by me. God can never be realized by me. God is realized. Oh.